Double Take is an extension of the award-winning movie review show Cinema Classics, which airs Thursdays at 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast version features additional content and discussion with guests. Double Take is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie review podcasts on NPR.
Can that be possible? It is. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Double Take. Ken, we're kind of going to look over the whole spectrum of movies now. We're not going to be tied to the connection between old movies and new movies. We're just simply going to be talking about the movies of the year that impressed us most.
2024 has come to a close, and we're going to reflect on our 365 days of movie watching, more or less.
Wide open for us. You have probably seen more movies than most people I know. So you're a perfect choice for this. And I'd like to open up at the obvious places. Ken, what's your favorite movie of 2024?
Oh, bless you, John, for asking me that. My favorite movie of 2024 is going to surprise some people. It is the animated film Flow.
Yes.
Yeah, this is the first time since 2013 that an animated film has topped my list. That was Frozen in 2013. I still to this day believe it's the best film of that year. Flow, what I love about Flow is one of those rare movies that does not have a firm story, and it allows you to bring your own personal life experiences into the theater with you, and how you interpret the movie is likely going to be very different from how other people interpret the movie. Everybody coming out of the theater is going to have seen a different film and interpreted a different way.
It is pretty bright stuff.
Yeah. To many people, it's a film about climate change. The movie is from Latvia. It's the first time a Latvian movie has...
This is not a Disney.
No, this is not a Disney. This film was made in Latvia, a country with a population smaller than the population of Ohio. And this is the first time they've had a big, successful movie hit. And this movie... Again, some people think it's about climate change. Some people in Latvia believe it mirrors the Soviet occupation of Latvia for 45 years. The oppressive force in the movie is open for whatever has impacted you. And the movie allows you to interpret the film based on your own experiences.
My favorite of the year was Sing Sing, and it continues to be, even though I was very impressed with Timothée Chalamet, in
A Complete Unknown.
A Complete
Unknown.
Yes,
well, he's good in both.
Right. That title just evades me. Yeah. But I was very impressed with him, and I'm thinking very warmly about it, largely because most people haven't seen Sing Sing, and this is the one starring Coleman Domingo.
Yes.
And the one about the prisoners who put on theater productions.
It's about the rehabilitation through theater program, through the arts, that took place in the Sing Sing maximum security prison in New York.
Yeah.
And many of the cast members are actual former
13
inmates.
13 or so.
Yes, who went through this program. Yes. One of them is very likely going to be nominated for a Best Supporting Actor nod.
And the other one is similarly themed. And it's called Ghostlight.
Ghostlight. Oh, what a discovery that was. And I'm sure that a lot of you out there are scratching your heads right now saying, Ghostlight, I don't remember that movie. Find it. I believe it's streaming.
It is streaming. I don't think Sing Sing is yet.
If it's not, it's going to be very close.
Yes.
But Ghostlight is about the redemptive quality of theater. So if you are a theater buff, you're somebody who performs locally here in Columbus, or have a background in theater, make sure you see Ghostlight. Find it in streaming, because it is about a family struggling with the death of a child and how theater brings them back together again. A small community theater production of Romeo and Juliet. And the cast is an actual family. It's an actual mother, father, and daughter.
Yes, yeah. All right, let's switch a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Actor.
Oh, best actor this year. I'm going to go with Coleman Domingo from Sing Sing. I'm right on board with you.
Yeah. So he didn't get it last time, although he was close.
Yeah, very close.
Right. But this time he might. I had mentioned earlier in the show how impressed I was with Chalamet.
Yes.
And believe me, I went in there not being impressed with him at all. I had no idea he was going to be this good playing Bob Dylan. He sings the song beautifully, and he plays his guitar. He's all Bob Dylan, and it brings off that
film. He had
film.
A tough shoes to fill, but he manages to pull it off.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Is anybody that you can think of in your experience for best actor?
For best actor, beyond Coleman Domingo, I am going to say Timothée Chalamet, probably more for Dune 2 in my experience.
Okay.
Dune 2 is a remarkable film.
How about female?
This was a year for strong women performances, and I really want to jump all over this. This was a movie year for movies for women. The Substance immediately comes to mind. A very, very tough film about the women in Hollywood and how women are discarded as soon as they hit the age of about 30 because they're always looking for some younger person, while men, of course, can continue acting right up until their death. This film does not take any prisoners, and Demi Moore in this movie gives a very brave performance. There's a lot of nudity, but it's not nudity for exhibitionism. It's nudity because she's an older woman, and she's making the point that an older woman can still be a strong character.
Proven by Nicole Kidman.
Yes.
In her Baby Girl.
In Baby Girl as well, yeah.
And there's some nudity there. Can't quite tell if the backside of her, which is really beautiful, is actually her backside.
But what I love is they're making a stand. This is women directors, women writers, making a stand that a woman in her 60s can still be a marketable actress.
But I'm surprised you haven't said anything about Wicked.
Oh, I'm going to get there.
All right.
I'm
going to
get there.
For women.
Yeah. For women, my best supporting actress, because this is where the Academy is putting her, is going to be Ariana Grande. She just makes that movie. As I mentioned last time we talked about it, I saw the play in 2004 when it was Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel. What made that show so great was the chemistry between them. And I actually like Ariana Grande's performance even better than Kristen Chenoweth's performance.
Another best actor. And I'm looking at the list from Golden Globes, which is pretty eccentric when you think about
it. The next one that comes to mind is, and I'm going to have a hard time pronouncing it, our lead actor from Emilia Perez, who is a transgender.
Oh, she's
wonderful. Transgender, and she is the first transgender to be nominated for a major Academy Award. She has to portray both the male character before the transition and the woman, and she has to sing as a man and as a woman. And as much as we, you know, say how great all these singing performances were, she had a much tougher challenge, I believe, than any other performer this year.
Carla Sophia Gascon.
Gascon, yes, yes. Not a name that's known to people.
No, just wonderful.
But the first time that a transgender actor is going to be nominated for a major Academy Award. And that opens the door to something I want to touch on just a little bit. 2024 is the first year in which we have seen movies that were made and marketed to a transgender audience. This is something brand new. We've had transgender characters for years. The Crying Game, which you and I just watched last year, but Boys Don't Cry. So we've had transgender characters. But this is the first time we've had transgender movies for transgender audiences. And I'm talking about two films that came out at the same time. One was called National Anthem, both low-budget movies. National Anthem was about transgender women and was marketed towards transgender women. And Summer Solstice was about transgender men, marketed towards transgender men. But there's something very interesting that went on with these two movies I just want to touch upon, because the psychology of that I find fascinating. National Anthem is, again, about transgender women, but it has lots of nudity, lots of graphic sex, and a little bit of action. And these are all qualities that we normally associate with movies that are marketed to men.
Do you think it's streaming?
I believe it is streaming, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure about Summer Solstice. But Summer Solstice, again, about marketed for transgender men, it's about two best friends, college roommates. One of them is a woman who is very outgoing, very, very loud. And then her roommate, who is very shy, very introverted, always in her shadows, who has become a transgender male, and they meet again a few years later, and it's sort of a rom-com, best friends, it's more of an emotional film, and this is the kind of film you would normally associate as being marketed towards women. I don't know where this is going to go, and of course, two movies are by no way a consensus, but I do find it interesting that the first two films, the transgender women movie is in a style normally marketed to men, the transgender man's movie is in a style normally marketed towards women.
Similar to the faith-based movies. The transgender movies are making their way, making sophisticated movies that are acceptable to the broad population.
And that is Emilia Perez.
Yes.
Yes. Going right back to that is Emilia Perez. Tremendous film. Probably going to be the film that has the best song for the Academy Awards, because there's so many to choose.
And I want to put a plug in for Mikey Madison.
Yes.
For Nora.
Another strong performance by a woman in a film that is, I believe, more geared towards women. Mikey Madison gives this bold, brave performance as a sex worker.
For the Oscars, they're going to be coming by theaters as they want to tap in to the mine that's going to be for them. You'll also be able to stream them. I'm not happy about that, but they are available on streaming.
Well, and the one film that's now being talked about as a front runner for Best Picture is in theaters right now, and that's The Brutalist.
You did mention your animated film, and I don't think I had anything to add to that other than The Wild Robot is a pretty good film.
Wild Robot is a great film.
Yeah.
No question about it. The artwork in The Wild Robot looks more like storyboard art than it does true animation, and that's one of the things I loved about it is it's a film that's just jaw-droppingly beautiful to watch.
We had mentioned at the end of Cinema Classics, Emilia Perez. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit more about that, because I just saw that, and I was very impressed.
Well, Emilia Perez is a Mexican film. It is all in Spanish. It is a musical. It stars Zoe Saldana, that we know from The Guardians of the Galaxy and a lot of other movies.
Yes.
It stars Selena Gomez as the former wife. And it stars the person who, Gascon, who is a transgender woman.
Yes.
Who is, in the film, starts out as a drug cartel boss, the nastiest of the nasty, responsible for thousands of deaths, running drugs, running a cartel, who decides that he wants to become a woman. And he's going to cut ties with his wife. She's going to think he's dead. And he's going to go through the transition. And this is done as a musical. And it's a fascinating film. And it's a fascinating film to me, largely watching the transition of Gascon's performance from the drug lord, very believable as the drug lord, to the post-surgery as this very benevolent woman who now heads a humanitarian effort to recover the bodies of people killed by cartels.
Yeah.
And Selena Gomez plays the estranged wife who thinks she's dead. And Zoe Saldana plays her attorney who helps negotiate through the workings of getting the sex change operation, which is done in Israel, and finding a place for her to live safely and making sure that nobody knows who she really was.
I was favorably impressed with the first half of that film. Mm-hmm. I thought it was getting into very deeply psychological about the transgender business. And who would have thought, it reminds me of The Aftermath. And I just saw one called The Fire Inside.
Oh, yes. And, oh, I wondered if you'd seen that.
Yes. Yeah. And I thought this was a very good film. And what I found about it, the same as Emilia Perez, they've taken the subject and they've extended it where nobody else thought to do so.
Yeah.
Here you have the girl winning in half of the film. She's won the gold medal for boxing. And then they take the aftermath. You know, what do you do after you do that? Well, unless you're prepared or have the right support, you're sitting there not knowing what to do with it.
You've achieved the greatest moment in your life. And now you're faced with the fact that the rest of your life is going to be an afterthought, a footnote.
Yes, right. Yeah.
And this is something that applies to a lot of different genres of film. I've seen this in a lot of war films where, you know, the brave soldier who's accomplished so much in the military comes back from the war and then has to struggle to find a life for themselves. The greatest film of all for that is the Best Years of Our Lives back in 1946, which won the Academy Award.
Boy, that's a knockout.
That's the origin film for all of these films, like you just described, of people having accomplished something monumental and then having to come home and figure out what to do with the rest of their lives.
Here's one that neither you nor I mentioned and probably doesn't hit our list of the top 10, but it should be on my list because I think it's, for the general population, a really fine film. It's not an art film, but it's a film that you can enjoy and yet feel that you've seen something good. This is called Conclave.
The Conclave. A great ensemble cast.
Yes.
Yeah. John Lithgow, who we haven't seen in a while, gives a strong, strong performance.
I think Ralph Fiennes
is the central. Yeah. Yeah, I think he's going to likely be nominated.
And this is about the Catholic Church. It's about selecting the Pope. It's fiction. Yeah. But I'm a former Catholic boy, and this stuff intrigued the heck out of me. The Vatican still remains a mysterious place. Dan Brown thrills me. So this is a great story.
I loved about Conclave was the third act comes together. You know, that movie, I was worried halfway through the movie that it wasn't going to have an ending, and then it has a big reveal. I love that about this movie. This is a movie that you definitely are going to go into the ending and go, wait, what just happened?
I'll tell you another one who will never be nominated, but I thought his performance was so engaging. Hugh Grant in Heretic.
Heretic. Hugh Grant being Hugh Grant and showing that he can do nasty, evil slasher horror and still come across as charming.
Oh, yeah. And non-sexy in his relationship with the two young women who appear at his door.
Only Hugh Grant could have pulled this movie off. It is really a vehicle. Now, those two women are great actresses in their own
right.
But only Hugh Grant could have pulled off that role and left you with a film that, that makes you come out of the theater going, wow, he wasn't so bad.
Well, beside Emilia Perez, do we have any foreign film?
Yes, we do. And thank you for asking. We've got Seed of the Sacred Fig.
Yes. Now, tell me about it because I haven't seen it.
Seed of the Sacred Fig is a film about Iran, although it is not Iran's entry into the Academy Awards because the director, writer of the film is now sentenced to death in Iran for having made this movie. It is about women who stood up in Iran to having to wear the burqas, the women who defied Islamic law and went outside not wearing full coverings, and how this caused massive riots. Lots and lots of people were killed. And this movie is about a family where the father is now one of the judges, one of the prosecutors who goes after these people. Well, he has two teenage daughters who are having to experience this, having to see their friends being tortured for having gone out and taken a stand against this. It has more action than you would think. It's not just like a family drama. It really spirals out of control in the third act. But it is likely going to be the Academy Award winner for Best Foreign Film because it deals with this very topical subject. And because the director has put his life on the line making this movie.
Back in America, at the end of the year, you can expect a film from this director. And I just saw it the other night. It's actually pretty decent.
Oh.
I'm looking at this film and I'm saying, you know, there's something familiar about this film. Well, it wasn't the film that was familiar. It's called Juror Number 2. It's Clint Eastwood's movie.
Okay.
And this guy gives you a good film at the end of the year.
Oh,
I don't know what he's thinking about.
This may be his last. He said that he's going to retire after this.
Well,
but he said that before, too.
Oh, yeah, he has. Many of the films we're talking about are only in theaters now.
Yeah.
You know, many of these art films just don't come across streaming until much later. And this is streaming, I think, on Netflix or Amazon. I forget which one. But the Juror Number 2, I mean, you want to sit there, and if you like courtroom procedures, with a premise that I've sometimes thought about, the situation with a juror relative to the crime that they're making a decision on. He happens to be involved, and the big dilemma in this film is whether he reveals it or not, because this guy is going to go up the river. And he knows that he didn't do it, or he believes that
he actually has inside information.
Yeah, well, what he knows is that if he reveals that he's seen it and that this guy probably didn't do it because this juror was present,
He could be charged. Interesting dilemma.
If you sit there and say to yourself, now what would I do? I'm sitting in this jury, and
Is Eastwood in the movie?
No.
Okay.
No. But there was something about the way it was presented that I said, I've seen something like this before. No, I've seen a Clint Eastwood film. It's kind of a very slow pace. He does concentrate not on action, but on language, which reminds me, again, here we go all over the place. There's one that I've liked that's not going to win, but I thought at the time might, A Real Pain.
A Real Pain is a beautifully acted film. It's really a vehicle for Eisenberg and Kieran Culkin. It puts both of their acting talents on display.
Yeah.
It's a buddy picture. It's a road trip picture.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's witty. Kieran Culkin's character comes across, to me anyway, as bipolar. So I struggled with the idea that we were watching a diagnosable illness, not so much a personality.
Yeah.
But other than that, I thought the film was very
good. It's up for Golden Globe for screenplay.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah, I can too.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of concentration on language, and I'm just a sucker.
And screenplay is going to be a tough category, both adapted and original. We've got Sing Sing now going after the best adapted, and it only is going to get that nomination as adapted because it's about a play that was written in Sing Sing. So by virtue of incorporating that play into the movie, it has to be an adapted screenplay.
Yeah.
But then you've got original, you've got Ghostlight, which I would love to see recognized. I'm not hopeful that it will. I'm not hopeful it's going to mention
at all
because almost nobody saw it, but very deserving. And you've got The Substance, excellent, well-written movie that packs a hard punch. really gets to the point it's trying to
make.
We're
part of a group that voted that the best movie of the year.
Yes, the Columbus Film Critics Association voted the film the number one film of the year.
Not my choice.
Not mine either. I like the film a lot. I don't like it number one, but I did like the movie a lot.
In animation, for which you are an expert. So what happened? Well, you have your flow. You just neglected your Inside Out 2?
No, not at all. I loved Inside Out 2. I thought a very worthy successor to Inside Out 1. Sets the stage for an Inside Out 3, which is inevitable because the movie did so well. And I can enjoy the voice acting in that movie forever, too. But you know, Inside Out 2... Wild Robot, strong, strong year for animated films this year.
Well, but wait, you're forgetting Mufasa?
And Mufasa, well, Mufasa would not be considered in the animation category.
Oh.
Because Mufasa is considered live action.
Ah.
Now, where Mufasa stands a chance is in cinematography. I don't think any movie this year, not Nosferatu, not any other film this year, not even Dune 2, can stand up to Mufasa for cinematography. That movie is just beautiful to watch. When you see it in the biggest screen you can. See it in an IMAX or a Dolby Atmos to catch the sound. Gorgeous, gorgeous movie. Regardless of whether it is a worthy successor to Lion King, it's a gorgeous movie.
And explain a little bit about this live action. Why can't that be?
Animation is considered an art form. Hand-drawn animation is an art style. And just like with Flow, even though it's CGI, it uses a very particular style that does not necessarily replicate real life. But what Disney has started doing is these live-action movies where the CGI is photorealistic. So they're not trying to emulate an artistic style. They're trying to duplicate photorealism. And you can argue whether or not that is a form of art. I don't necessarily believe it is. I think the cinematography is a form of art, but I don't think trying to be photorealistic therefore qualifies as animation because you're eliminating the artist's individual style.
Well, everybody will point to Disney for animation, but you and I know we have a real affection for the House of Ghibli.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Now, that to me, that's art.
Ghibli is... Miyazaki
is
probably the greatest animator of all time.
Yes,
with apologies to Walt Disney, I'm sorry. Miyazaki is the Stanley Kubrick of animation. And even John Lasseter, when he was running the Disney studios, said Miyazaki influenced movies like Brave and Tangled and Frozen, particularly with Miyazaki's reluctance to have a villain. He felt that the conflict that the characters are going through in daily life is more important than having a two-dimensional villain. And that carried over into movies like Frozen and Tangled. And so Miyazaki's, you cannot overstate how influential he's been to the
animation. And that's a new name for some of our audience, and we want to recommend it highly because it doesn't look like your Disney production. Don't shy away from it.
Take our
advice, and you'll be so thoroughly enchanted.
Don't go through life without having seen Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle.
Yes.
And I guarantee you, once you see one of those two, you're going to want to see the rest.
Yes. This year, a young actor I saw many times, kind of like Benedict Cumberbatch, I suppose, was Nicholas Hoult. And he appeared in a movie that you liked, I think, Nosferatu?
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't hear us saying anything about Nosferatu.
We touched a little bit about it. Nosferatu is a very moody, very brooding. It attempted to be a sensual, erotic horror film, but I think it failed at that. It is no Paul Schrader's Cat People, that's to be sure. If you want to watch the definitive erotic horror film, watch Cat People. This movie spends much more time...
Not cats.
No. We watch Cats at midnight and we throw things at the screen.
Cat People.
Cat People from 1982 is still to this day one of the great horror films.
Right.
But Nosferatu, I think, failed because it spent so much of its time brooding. And it never really exploded. So I struggled with it. I've watched it twice. I liked it both times. I didn't love it.
We don't often agree, and we don't agree on this one. I think it's very good. I admire remakes. And for starting with F.W. Murnau in 1922 with Nosferatu, and then coming up, Werner Herzog doing with Klaus Kinski.
Yes. The Kinski.
79.
The Kinski is a great film. Yeah. And if you haven't seen it, go out of your way to find it.
How do you make it interesting again? Well, for me, they make it interesting again here. And I'll tell you what makes it interesting. And you mentioned it. The psychological underpinning, Freud and Jung, in this are very apparent, and particularly in the female, Ellen, I think her name is, the wife.
Yeah, the wife.
Played by Johnny Depp's daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and we take the classic Dracula characters and kind of throw them out the window. Van Helsing has been replaced by a character played by Willem Dafoe.
Yes.
Renfield character, the character that normally goes to Dracula's castle, becomes a psycho, a nutcase, and then comes back, is now the hero, and his wife is now the featured character instead of Mina. And Van Helsing's daughter. So don't go with the classic Dracula characters. These are all different characters this time. One movie I do want to touch upon, though, because it is so good, is Dune 2. Dune 2 falls into a very short-listed category, along with Aliens and Terminator 2, of sequels that are actually better than their originals. And notice the other two films in that category were also science fiction films, because science fiction lends itself very well to sequels. But Dune 2 gets it right. Dune 2 takes an almost unfilmable book, the second half of Dune, and it finds a way to make it really unique and really interesting, because instead of focusing on the action elements as they did in 1984, they focus instead on the idea that Paul knows he is a messiah, but he also knows he's going to cause the deaths of billions of people through messianic wars, jihads, but he's powerless to stop it. So you get to see the character as a Christ figure who knows he's going to cause untold suffering through his presence and how he has to struggle to deal with that. And of course, Timothée Chalamet gives a fantastic performance. Everybody in the movie is absolutely phenomenal. And there's going to be a third one, thank heavens. They are going to do Dune Messiah. And we're going to see a lot more of Anna Taylor-Joy in that movie as Paul's sister.
I can't get enough of her.
Who is going to be, if anything, an even more interesting character than Paul Atreides. So I'm very much looking forward to that sequel coming out next year. And for 2025, the other sequel I'm very much looking forward to is Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse, the sequel to one of the greatest animated movies of all time.
I've got to cut this off. I can't get you started. There's much to see this from the year 2024. And enjoy yourselves in doing that. Look forward to the Oscars. I haven't heard us talk about anyone that I think is the slam dunk this year. I don't think there's one you can look at and say, I think that one's going to get it. I don't have that feeling.
I don't either. I think that there's favorites. There may be strong favorites. Even the Best Picture, I'm not 100% convinced Brutalist is going to take it.
But the buzz is coming. And
the
you're
buzz
right.
is Brutalist.
The buzz is Brutalist there.
Yeah.
And everything else you mentioned, even my Sing Sing, I know it doesn't have a chance.
If I have one person that I would love to see win an Academy Award this year, it's Ariana Grande for Wicked, because I think she just makes that movie and she owns that role, and the movie is so much better for her being in it.
Yeah. And one of the reasons that we are in the top 10 of National Public Radio movie podcast is that we are both still, even at our advanced ages, enthusiastic about movies.
And looking forward to 2025.